In 1993, I got a call from some friends in New York State who said there was a tremendous heavy footstep going on in their attic. You know, something was walking across. It wasn't all the time, of course, but at certain times of the day. And they said, well, can you come and check? They didn't feel threatened, but they wanted me to come and check it out, and I did. Ben was like 1 year old when this happened. Well, it turns out that in the attic of this house was an astounding presence. It was a masculine presence. It was a huge physical outline. And there was such nobility and goodness exuding, you know, from beaming off this creature. It was an honor to be in his presence. I couldn't identify what he was, but we were able to communicate. He spoke, and when I say spoke, I actually heard words in my ear. And it was a very odd, an old form of Latin. And, of course, having been in seminary for I studied Latin for years and was able to more or less get through, I think. His use of the word invenio told me, instead of reperio, which is an odd way to put it, he was on a quest across the worlds. And he said worlds, plural. He was looking for a place called Renthusia, which I'd never heard of, never heard of it since. He and his people were harassed by what I would call parasites. He used the word, as I recall, or he pronounced it, Sagino. I knew the word as Sagina or Sagina in the classical pronunciation, which means essentially feeder, the feeders. He was referring to the feeders. And the feeders were after his people and had been known to destroy worlds or to prompt somehow the destruction of worlds. And this is before this. And once they had fed all they could on that species, they would destroy the world, the given world. And he was looking for Renthusia, which I think I have, Ben and I have found ourselves. And this is one of the first pieces of the puzzle. And this was a place where his people were going to escape to avoid the destruction of their world. And again, I cannot stress enough the goodness and nobility and the truth that this guy was a beacon of this. I don't know. I've never run into his species since, I don't think. But this was the message in 1993. Really got me thinking. In February and March of 1995, all of a sudden, Ben was like two,
right.
I felt the overwhelming presence of an ancestor who would suddenly just breeze into my home office. As Ben will tell you, it was in a converted chicken coop at our old place in Cumberland, Rhode Island, and I worked at home there, and Ben was with me all day as a routine. And the message was from this ancestor, and Ben would stare at the couch when this happened, as if he could see him, too. I don't know if you have any memory of that, Ben.
No.
But the message essentially was, get ready. Get ready for what? You know, but that was the message. In 2000, there was a different ancestor with the same thing going on. I mean, there were people would visit from different parts of the multiverse, and I was only just beginning to get comfortable with it. In 2004, there was a boy in Florida with an invisible friend. I was down there, and someone asked me to come and see him because they were concerned about this invisible friend, and, you know, was it evil or was it real or was the kid nuts or what?
Hence the video
you
sent.
Well, the boy,
right?
Whose name was Tony, it could predict all sorts of things about the future because of a companion nobody else could see here, and this is this invisible friend. I met him. He was a great outgoing kid. You would expect sometimes when someone's having this experience, they'd be, you know, introverted and, you know, didn't have any friends. This kid was into baseball, sports, lots of friends. Didn't fit the pattern of someone who was having a psychological problem. Not that I'm a doctor, I'm not. But he also didn't seem to have a paranormal problem as such either. To make a long story short, Tony made it clear that Tony, the boy's name was Tony, and this invisible friend's name was Tony, who was born exactly 100 years after the young boy of whom he was the invisible friend.
100 years after, yeah.
And he said that he lived in Florida, which in his world was part of a rather benign empire that included the entire east coast of North America all the way up to Labrador. You know, a very different parallel world. He made it clear to me that between 2012 and 2016, in his world, many people had died because what he called the eaters, the eaters got tired of us, and the people themselves, some of them anyway, moved to another place. And the eaters themselves moved because they'd had enough of that world, and apparently it was destroyed or whatever, and it was not good. And before that, Tony said that his family and others had gone through a door to another place where it was safe, and the eaters couldn't go. This is what he said. Now, none of that made too much sense then, but it certainly does now. Now, by 2000, frequent contacts, either through meditation, dreams, or waking contact, because this was going on with me, and I've never said this on the air before because I don't want people to think I'm a fruitcake, but this is just as real as I've ever experienced anything. The message was, get ready. And from the day Ben was born, something was very special about him. People would comment on it. And it became clear to me, as I say, I took that lecture tour of California those 2 years. People were, as you say, getting antsy about something. They knew something was in the wind, and people were getting nervous. Now, in 2005, it became clear after I started working with Ben, who has these tremendous gifts and really filled in the blanks, I think, after he started especially working with the shaman he's working with, it quickly became clear that he had an easier time communicating than I was, although he was communicating with different people and different things. Ben grew up in the multiverse. He was very aware of this kind of concept, and he was very comfortable with it, and it was natural to him from the day one, whereas I kind of had to learn it, and he connected with the shaman. What really was the turning point for both of us in this communication, in this quest to find out what's going to happen, was this case in Connecticut that I've mentioned before, and we're not the only people who are in on this, because this is where it starts to get real negative and kind of dangerous even. This case started in 2005 and was essentially a family having trouble with ghosts and weird things happening. And it turned out that this place is sort of a grand central station of the multiverse. All kinds of people, species passing through. Nothing negative, though. This is the place where the people would see the legs dangling from the ceiling with somebody walking as if on a surface that wasn't there in our world.
Jeez.
And it began to become apparent that there was a geographical triangle at work here, of which this house was one point. Now, Ben and I, and this is just last year, Ben and I triangulated this with an area that was reported to have some sort of military activity going on. And we were put onto that by UFO sightings. People all over the town would stop, pull off in their cars, and look into the sky and see these UFOs. We ourselves saw strange lights in the sky there. And we eventually went to the area where people were seeing troops. And we got the strong impression, and we did this on camera because we were doing the pilot for this TV show we're supposed to be developing.
Were the troops there for the sightings?
As far as our understanding was, that they were there to keep people out of this particular location.
All right.
Ben and I walked up to a windowless building that had a large antenna. And, Ben, I don't know how far you want to go with this. Do you want to tell them what happened then?
To be honest, most of the entire excursion was pretty fuzzy, but from what I do remember, when we walked up this dirt path, it had a wire running from the barn to this, looked like a microwave antenna, and there was a windowless building with like a large vent on top of it, and there was a barbed wire fence around it, so there was really no way of getting into it. And there was no door into the building. And then all of a sudden, I just, from what I remember, I felt something pull me towards it. And then I fell to the ground. And the producer and the director were like, is he all right? My dad was like, just don't touch him. That's all you have to do. Just do not touch him.
Yeah, I knew the routine by this time, the shamanic.
Oh, this was happening. Like, okay, he was going into some kind of a trance or something?
Trance.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And the ultimate conclusion was that there was a portal in this building that somebody, you know, the government or somebody was aware of and was trying to work with.